This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dream.
Every relationship with someone who operates in this sort of way eventually reaches a breaking point. Sometimes the partner walks away, sometimes they get discarded first, and sometimes, in the most extreme cases, the person holding all of the control decides they're not willing to let it end on anyone's terms but their own. Eric Richens, according to prosecutors, was quietly consulting with divorce attorneys and estate planning lawyers before he died. He was starting to find his way out. This part is about what happens at the end. And for anyone in it right now, how to get out in one piece. With me is Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author, and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent. Siobhan, what typically triggers the end phase in these sort of relationships? Is the targeted partner finally leaving? Is that what does it? Or does the person with these patterns often engineer the collapse themselves?
Well, very often the targeted partner, the light bulbs start coming on. And It may be that, you know, there's irrefutable evidence about, you know, in this case, the financial things that were going on. I mean, you know, that just became so flagrant. And often they start to set boundaries. They start to set limits. Mm-hmm. And that pushes the predatory partner often into a rage because they're losing control. Mm-hmm. And so things may escalate. And that's one of the dangerous times, because you never know when that partner is enraged, what are they going to do? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, that's when violence starts, or sometimes murder starts, sometimes murder-suicide. But that's when things can get really dicey. And I think it can come out of the blue. It may be something that you never saw coming. Mm-hmm. But that's the time you find a good therapist or person with a domestic violence counseling background, and you try to go through what are the stages I need to prep in order to get out of here safely and protect the kids and figure out legally what my options are. So it's usually a gradual phase, you know, just like people don't get married in one day, there's a process. They don't get divorced in one day, there's a process. And you have to often have someone coaching you for how do I do this safely, and look at the finances, look at the custody. I mean, it's really complicated.
I got a quick question about that, with it, because oftentimes with characters like this, the smallest, what's your phrase all the time, Robin? Something in the force, the tremor in the force? Is that
a tremor in the force or a wobble?
A wobble in the force, where there's just the slightest. When you decide, I'm going to put up a boundary, I'm not just going to let you do anything you want and just agree with everything you say because I'm fearful of what your reaction is going to be if anybody slightly suggests anything different. If you put up a small boundary, just the small, like, you know what? No, I'm not. That's not going to work out for me. I'm not going to be able to. We're not going to do this, or I'm not going to participate in whatever this may be. Just the smallest thing. Not shouldn't be into a healthy relationship. The partner would be like, oh, okay, cool. Well, you have a great night. I'm going to go do this. But in situations like this, those small little things can feel, I guess, like the end to the partner who is the controlling, monstrous one. And they react as if you had just said, here's divorce papers. When you just said, you know what? I'm going to watch reruns of Cheers tonight rather than going out. They will treat it as an atomic bomb going off. So it's very hard, which also then keeps you trapped in those situations, because you can't just go to a healthy place and slowly start instilling small boundaries to keep a healthy relationship, or maybe elevate the relationship to a healthy place, because that controlling partner won't let you put up one barrier. With that being said, it's someone who's in that sort of a situation, it's very difficult to slowly work your way out, because everything is huge. And that's why sometimes it feels like you just kind of go full force, like, all right, well, it's going to be an atomic bomb no matter what. How do you navigate that sort of thing when one person's cognitive distortions are so far out there that they see the slightest demonstration of self-autonomy as the biggest threat in the world to them?
I think in cases, you know, where it's going to be potentially dangerous like that, you have to do it covertly. You know, yes. You if you start your own savings account privately, so you have some funds, you talk to lawyers, you talk to domestic violence counselors, and you have to keep that secret, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Typically in a marriage relationship, I'm not in favor of secrets.
Yeah.
I think couples should be honest with each other. But this is a case where you really, you have to keep it quiet and do your plan so that when, you know, I mean, you can just pack up and leave one day if you have the resources.
Yeah.
And if you don't have kids, it's much easier to do that. And, you know, yes. So there are cases where it's just like, get out, cut the tie, move out of the house. But when you've got a lot of joint assets, when you've got children, it's probably going to be something you have to do a lot of planning for in advance. And and custody is a huge problem with, mm-hmm. as you say, you don't want the abusive partner to get custody of the kids.
Yeah.
So that takes a lot of strategy.
Yeah, I'd imagine that, you know, in these cases, as we've been discussing this, you have the imagery going through my mind is like two countries at war on the border. I mean, just think of Russia and Ukraine, right? So you have Russia coming in to usurp land, and then all of a sudden you got the, you know, the power struggle. I want that land back. And so two people in the same kind of thing. So you have the supreme narcissist control freak that if the spouse or the partner tries to take a little bit of that territory back, you know, set it at a boundary, and they completely freak, lose their mind, fight battle, and eventually will keep battling until they get their territory back. That to me is that major red flag, that last thing where, like you said, I'm all about transparency, Siobhan, too, because transparency is the great mitigator of all things, right? But at that point, you got to think of it as a spy case, as an operation. Yeah. When we were working with our counterintelligence spy operatives, we had to create secret exfiltration plans, because if the bad guys knew where they were going to go, what were they going to do? They're going to hunt them down and kill them. And Tony, what's the one case? Oh, the millionaire murders, right? What's his face? That the woman, the wife divorced the husband, and then 8 years later, he finally he's being accused of charging.
Tepe.
Yeah, Tepe, the Tepe case.
Oh, yeah,
you know, I mean, there's a great example of there's someone actually exfiltrated themselves, but they're still being hunted down because you still knew where to get them. So you got to do the secret exfiltration. We're not saying, hey, run away and hide from everyone.
No.
But you talk to loving critics.
And I feel like a lot of times, you know, because if you're a healthy person, you're going to come to it from kind of a healthy mindset, and healthy people can have conversations about conflict, can have resolution to conflict, and can move on and move forward. But when you're dealing with someone who's incapable of that, how important is it to recognize and call a spade for what it is? Because if someone's listening to this and they're already at this end phase and they're like, they don't need more proof. Is it completely a fruitless battle to engage that person in any sort of reasonable conversation about fixing anything, about getting anything to change, airing those grievances? I mean, the temptation, I think, in a lot of cases, especially when things get really bad, is okay, especially if the perpetrator here, the narcissist, the borderline, whatever it is attacking and saying horrible things. It is to react, and it is to tell them off, to tell them the reality, to really lay into them. But does that ever help a damn thing? I mean, is that ever the approach anyone should take with a person like this? As good as that would feel in that moment, the damage that can do and the danger that can put you into is oftentimes, I guess, from my experience, from everything I've learned about this, it's never worth it. And that's why gray rocking is so important with folks like this. What's your take, Siobhan, for somebody who's listening to this right now in that position, who really is like, I want to tell them what's up.
What
would you say?
Yeah, people try to have those conversations because they want to get through to them. They want to point out their errors. They want to point out how they're wrong. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And counselors, you know, I have had people in therapy where I get one of the partners alone and say, you know, this, what you're trying to do here, I don't think you should be doing couples therapy because it's not helpful and it's going to make things worse for you. And so what I encourage people to do, as you say, gray rocking, detach, just detach And if you need a therapist to go talk about your anger and grief and frustration, that's where you take the message and you talk about it privately. But detach from the need to engage with the predator.
Yeah, I'm wholehearted on that one. Don't engage crazy, man. That's my main philosophy in life. Don't engage crazy. You know, those nutters will drag you down because there's, and a lot of times, because, you know, Siobhan, and you said it really good. A lot of times what's driving us to want to engage them and confront them? Our ego and vanity and need to be right, to justify our actions to them. No. Who cares?
Exactly.
You're only doing it for self-gratification. No, stop it. You don't need it. They don't need it. They don't care. Really, the words you're about to say don't matter. There's nothing you could say that's going to sink into them because they are nuts. Don't even do it.
Yeah.
1,000%. And it's hard because that's a muscle in itself that you're exercising.
We want to jam it to them. Yeah. Nope. Let go.
It's just, there's no point. It's hard. It is hard because that is the reaction. But trust me, and I say probably anyone who's been through this, that will not help you in any way, shape, or form. No. Resist and go and find a way to heal and detach. That's what needs to be done.
Don't talk to crazy.
There was another case we were talking about earlier. There's the Kelsey Fitzsimmons case, which woman in jail for 100 days because she couldn't blow into the breathalyzer as part of the terms of being released. She was shot in the lung. She didn't have the ability to breathe into it. But they kept saying, well, part of the release is you have to do this breathalyzer. Well, she's not able to. It's like saying, okay, just get him to swear on the Bible. They don't have an arm. Like, use your right hand. Like, well, just use your right hand to swear on the Bible. Their arm's not there, but they can do it. Everybody has to swear on the Bible. No, they don't. They can't. Doesn't exist. But this is what you need to do. And just kind of getting caught in that loop. Yeah. Get out of the loop. Get out of the loop and recognize the armless person for what they are, because they're never going to swear in that Bible with their right hand. So just accept it and move the F on. Your thoughts in the comment section and on Substack, YouTube and Substack. The links are in the description. We'd love for you to weigh in and give us your thoughts. We got a great community here who's been through a lot of this stuff, too. If you're listening to this and recognizing it and finding it therapeutic and helpful, great. Be sure to weigh in. But we're not medical advice. So be sure to, of course, always consult your own medical experts on anything. All right. Siobhan's book, it is here, Nightbird. You can read all about her adventures in this world. It's a story. Definitely do check it out. Robin's brand new book, also applicable to all this. Good one for Corey. Corey, I hear you're going to be having a little time in prison for a little while. Let me recommend this to you, Corey, as you're Googling yourself, because I know you can't resist and you're watching us tell stories about you and talk about how fucking batshit crazy you are. This would be a great book. It's not all about me. I'm sure you'll glean a lot from it. But for those of you who aren't like her, you will. So enjoy. It's available now wherever books are sold. All right. Until next time, for Siobhan, for Robin, for Todd, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.